sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
J Flow in the house.
And welcome to the show. This week, we review The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts. And then we go into a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Core. TV Corner? What?
No, analysis.
I just think it's really funny because we were so like low energy. We were like this and then... Hello, welcome to Skeleton Boys, our movie podcast.
Because it's been a long weekend.
It's been a long weekend. We had our office party. So we did. It's been nice.
Our annual office party.
You see all the fun on Instagram. Oh, no, it already died, right? It disappeared.
It disappeared. I guess we'll post it so you guys can see.
The evidence.
But TV Corner, right? Because we're doing Attack of the Planet of the Apes.
Attack of the Planet of the Apes. The reboot. The Rise of the Technosoft. The reboot. Yes, we're doing episode 3, Murder in the Rue Morgue.
Because if you haven't figured out who Verna is supposed to be, obviously she is Caesar the ape from the movies. Obviously.
Clearly, Henry Thomas is...
is James Franco's character.
James Franco's character. Yeah. And then Bruce Greenwald is Tim Burton. So, there. It's figured out.
I do like it because Verna is an anagram, obviously, for the word ape. So.
Yep. Alrighty. What did you think? This episode was structurally differently. We actually spent more time with all the kids instead of a singular episode, which is what I thought they were gonna do. Just focus in on one of the kids each episode into the murder of them all. But it looks like they are. And I'm kind of glad they did because if I had to sit and watch one singular episode about each kid and then they die, it would be kind of a very nothing plot structure. So now we kind of got this full spin on
it. It would be very like, I know you fell off The Walking Dead, but that's basically what they did like the first like 4 or 5 seasons. If one of the characters is going to get killed off, you knew they were because there was like this whole...
heavy focus
swan song of an episode about them or whatever.
Yeah.
And only one of them I thought was pulled off fucking beautifully. And that happens to be an actor that's going to be in the movie review today.
Chad Coleman's spoilers.
Like, swan song
episode.
It was so beautiful. It was like really, really beautiful.
Oh.
Like it felt really, really bad for him.
Yeah. So it looks like Verna is... now, instead of focusing on one kid, she's just kind of going over all of them and incorporating herself in ways, like, kind of like morality plays. It's kind of what it seems like, right?
Yeah, but like, you know, casually fucking one of the kids' husbands in front of them. And,
what?
You remember? Because like, what's her name? The from Midnight Mass.
The redhead?
Yes. She has that thing with her husband where they hire somebody to come in and pretend to be her. And then eventually I think she just like is like cuckolding herself intentionally so she can masturbate. Remember we saw that a little bit in the previous episode?
Oh, okay. Well, they haven't. I thought that she was only watching him live a normal existence as she beats off. That's the vibe I got.
Well, because in this one, when Verna came in and pretended to be whomever to fit that role play thing, She talks about like, and I brought like the red or whatever color nightie, and she was gonna show her. She's like, we'll get to that later. So they all have like a really weird sex thing, I think. And I'm yeah. I feel like that's important to the story for some reason. I haven't figured it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, yeah, that's true, right? All of them do. I mean, that's, I think we talked about that last week, but yeah, again, that seems to be the thing that's kind of the through line for them, except for the doctor child. You know what I'm talking about? She is using apes as, what kind of ties into this episode? She's using fake results of the apes that she's experimenting on, and just to appease her dad, and
she continued to work. It's because she gets off on it. There's her weird sex thing.
Yeah,
I like lying about my results.
I like to, and then just, I don't have the actress not listed in the idea. Oh, there she is. Yeah. Yeah.
What's her name? I was just gonna say, just want to bring up for no reason that there's like an, it's become like a meme thing, but also in like gaming culture, people doing the that thing like for fun, right? And it has started to seep into like young kids' heads. And this one young kid who clearly doesn't know what the fuck he's like doing was at like a family event and got on the microphone and he did that. He's like, can everybody give me an oh yeah? And everybody's just like, what the fuck? There you go. That's your current pop culture news. We're ruining kids with the internet and video games.
No.
Ban video games.
Maybe.
Make them ban all, get rid of, make them so dirt cheap. Just so I can buy them.
Just the ones in Japan. We just banned the ones in Japan.
PlayStation 5 is the devil. Tank the system. Make them only $50 to buy.
Do it quick. Yeah.
Also, TVs. Make it a bundle deal for $75.
But yeah. What happened in this episode? Your favorite character, actor, died.
The best part of the episode. I'm just like waiting for like the day that Mike Flanagan and what's her name? Something Siegel, right? Kate Siegel? No.
Kate Siegel, yeah.
It is Kate Siegel, right? Okay.
Yes.
Like, oh, we want to be on your show. And then they just like rip my head off because I'm an asshole. I'm sorry. Yeah. It was Kate Siegel who's playing a early 30-year-old. Late 20s, maybe? Oh, well, let's see. If the youngest kid was 24, I think.
Yes.
And then I feel like there was a timeline. So maybe it was like 10 years apart. So she was like 30, mid-30s, I guess.
Sure.
I mean, I could be making this up. But I also retain weird information for no reason.
You do. I was like, oh, I remember it is. Yeah. I was like, yeah, You could just be lying to me. I'd just be like, yeah.
I'm just trying to justify the age in my head because I don't think you expected her to be the next youngest to go, right?
No, and in fact, I didn't realize she was one of the bastard kids.
Yeah, I didn't catch that either.
So the oldest one is the doctor. Victorine, which I didn't even know that was her name, but she's the doctor. She's the oldest one. She out of the bastard kids. If she doesn't get along with, this character, the Kate Siegel character,
that's right.
And I yeah, apparently like
a moment. You remember they're trying to do the cover up, for Percy. Well, no. What's what was the other character? The kid that died in the first
Percy, episode? I think is correct. Second yeah, second episode. I believe it's Percy.
Perry. No, wait.
Perry? Could be Perry.
Sure.
I think you're right.
Anyway, they're trying to do like the cover up with it and like...
Right.
This, her character just like chimes in like, no, we can't have Mark Hamill do it. He's dumb, even though you know, clearly he's been doing this for fucking ever, and like he's really good at it. But mm-hmm. she like really, really wanted to put her foot in there and be like, no, I can save the family. And then it was like just, I hate to say it, it's not even her fault. It's just the writing at this point. Where it was like, she starts spitballing all these ideas and everybody's like, oh, wow, those are actually really good. But every idea she said, I was like, yeah, obviously, right? And I'm like, if you're going to lie and do all this shit and make it up, why wouldn't it just be what you just said? Like, yeah, of course. And if everybody's aware they have the fund to do cover-ups, then why is this all making it sound like good ideas? It's just, I thought that was just a really oddly written scene.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, I didn't pay too much attention to it, to be honest. I just thought, yeah. No, I mean, what you're saying is correct, yeah. Like, because it seemed like the spin she wanted to give was kind of like, okay, well, let's paint him as a hero, right? Basically.
Yeah.
Let's paint him as somebody, a tragic end to a very famous person, you know what I mean? So,
and like a secret humanitarian or whatever.
Secret humanitarian, stuff like that. I think it's just there to also just again reinforce the idea that they're just rich, powerful people that can just buy their way out of problems. And now this is sort of like a lot of the show is just a lot of them getting their comeuppance, I guess, you know, they're
Or they're being judged. It's more like Roderick's, what, the sins of the father or whatever, right? I think you had mentioned that first time. I also, I guess I like how they were able to play off that there was like fucking acidic chemicals in the water tanks. It just like felt like a very strange, oh, so we hit them all in these tanks on top of these buildings that we own that are condemned. And, you know,
that's pretty, that seemed pretty plausible. Like, oh, we have all this illegal shit that we're gonna dump somewhere, but we can't do it because people are watching us, so we're just gonna store it up here until like,
who didn't catch them pumping up these huge fucking tanks on top of a building where there's nothing around? Like,
I mean you could just do the writer wave away, oh, we have money, we have,
might as well just privilege. Pump it into the ground at that point. Fuck it. Who cares? Throw it in the river. Who cares?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, they don't want to get caught. I mean, so.
Make hair products out of it. I don't know. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
It's true.
I got ideas. I've seen.
You got big ideas.
I've seen Tim Burton's Batman. You make a face cream out of it, right?
Yeah.
But that was like a real. That's why. He's very adamant that it was on him that he killed his son, even though nobody checked the water first.
Yeah. Which is again, it seems pretty
plausible.
Guess, yeah. Like that, attention. That they would hire, that, you know, they would use their money and influence to get what they want. And then in doing so, because he was the young and kind of naive and reckless one, he would probably find, anybody to pay anybody and somebody to do what he wants. So,
which I think maybe it's because, you know, you think a little bit differently when you're older, but if I was somehow stuck in that situation there and that I saw that they were going to open up the valves, I'm like, this place is fucking gross. No, I'm good. I'm not going to get wet by whatever this dirt water is.
Yeah.
Like, what was this place before? Nah, I'm out.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? We did learn that the wife survived barely.
Barely. Yeah, she's barely. Fucked up. And then she when she finally comes to towards the end of the episode, she's like freaking out, and she's like, "Yeah, dude, you're basically Freddy Krueger at this point." Like,
oh, that's harsh for Freddy Krueger.
I mean, that's I think what Freddy Krueger was supposed to kind of look like.
She looks like somebody that was raped 100 times.
Damn, okay. You know what? No, she kind of looks like
Freddy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The 100, yes. Whatever.
Maniacs.
She kind of looks like, and I'm wondering if this is an ode to Hellraiser when what's his face is getting his like skin back or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what she kind of looks like. She kind of looks like that Robbie Williams music video. And this is a this is our review of House of the Fall of Usher, as we explain how one character looks and mention a bunch of pop culture references that people have probably forgotten about. She looks like that Robert Williams music video where he's ripping his skin off.
Yeah. Wasn't it that one? Wasn't it Millennium?
I want to say that's what it was called. Yeah, right? Millennium, I think.
Oh, I think it was more of a dancey.
Yeah, it definitely was. Let me see.
Millennium was more... Millennium, I thought, was the ballad, and then he had more of a dancey track that became... Which is the one I think I got him famous in England or whatever. Great Britain.
Let's see. Rock DJ is what it's called. I wouldn't have called that.
I think that is the one where he's taking off his flesh. He's peeling back his flesh. Yeah. And then, Millennium was the more ballady one.
The one with all the violins, right? Which I know doesn't help because I feel like during this era of the late 90s, everybody had fucking violins.
The Verve.
Yeah.
You know.
Not to be confused with the Verve pipe.
I think Dr. Dre had a song with some violins too.
Yeah.
What is that hip hop song with the violins? It's the wedding song that they just redid. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
But come on, help me, John.
Oh, no.
You're my other and useless knowledge from the 90s. It's the wedding song. It was part of Bad Boys or Bad Boys 2. Or Big Mama's House. I just know Martin Lawrence is in it. So.
Oh, Coolio's Gangster Paradise, where there is
that's it. Yeah, I gotta go into my mind palace for this song.
Yeah, the Wu-Tang Clan. That's what it was.
Yeah, it was.
100% what it was.
Was it the Wu-Tang? No, it's a. You know the wedding procession song. Some rapper sang over it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't.
You're talking about the Here Comes the Bride song?
Yeah. It's, shit. I'm so glad we're spending minutes on this.
I don't know. I can't help you with this one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you need more information. I'm not giving you enough. Yeah.
And now this is where we get to the most important part of this episode.
The apes!
Apes! When Verna turns into Caesar.
When Verna turns into Caesar, she did.
And unfortunately, we have to get rid of Say Goodbye to my favorite character actress of all time.
The apes?
The apes. Oh.
What's his name?
Was it? But you did send me a screenshot of.
I don't know. Should we talk about this? Is it rude to talk about this?
You just thought it was a very interesting choice, like a committed choice for a reaction. But she was all fucked up, right? Isn't this episode? She's basically doing a bunch of drugs and drinking.
Is after she woke up.
Oh, that's right.
And then Yeah, she drives over and she has this thing where she wants to know about the apes, right? She wants to know about she wants to catch her sister. The rumor is that she's disposing their bodies, walking out with them and stuff like that. None of her experiments work, so she's trying to prove that. And she goes, we have the scene where this is going to be the death scene because what's her face is there?
Yeah.
Verna. And
it was a kind of strange I mean, I think it's because this is just supposed to be her arc. So it almost made me feel like that security guard that was there wasn't actually there. Oh, no, it was Verna. Right, Verna kept giving her chances to, like, not go on into the thing.
Yeah, just like she did with the what's-his-face, too.
Harry?
Perry, yeah.
Yeah, because I did like how she's like, do you know who I am? She's like, yeah. She's like, that's right. She's my sister. And in my head, I'm like, okay. Like, I don't care. No.
Yeah.
But go ahead and go in there then.
Yeah, well, she gave a choice. She chose. She tried. And so she finds out basically that everything they said was true, basically, and that Verna was in the disguise of an ape. But there's a reaction shot. There's where Verna opens her shirt to see all the surgical scars of with the monkeys, but we don't really see it first. We see Verna's just open her shirt, cut to Kate Siegel give an interesting reaction. A reaction like over the mouth disgust, shock. I don't know. It just didn't really fit what the mood was, or what we had seen so far. Because when they cut back, the ape, we see the perspective of the ape, and we see all the little nasty scars and surgery marks and everything, all the operation stuff. But how would you describe this reaction? Because I see you looking at it, I think.
Yeah, you do. God, what does it remind me of? It's like one of her eyes is bug-eyed and the other one's like squinting down like a comical, like, disgusted look.
It's a big choice. How about that? It's just a really big choice for the moment, I thought. It caught me off guard.
Her mouth with one hand, and then the other arm is directly straight down. Like, there's no emotion or reaction with the rest of her body. It's
like, just she's like not...
Yeah, it's because she's fucked up. That's
what
I don't know.
Okay, well, it made me laugh.
It's an interesting
screenshot. I screenshotted it and sent it to John, so I know that he loves Kate Siegel. So yeah, and she died and she's dead, and we're gonna move on to the next kid, who I think is a really underrated actor. I really, really enjoy him. What's his name? Royal Coley. So good.
Yeah, they also I was trying to figure out if, like, does he have tattoos, or did they just add a bunch of tattoos that you don't see?
I think they added them, right? Because he's been in other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting choice. This was the first time, I think, in the series where we got like a jump scare, which I thought was unnecessary.
Okay, which
it's just I have a feeling they're gonna do this every time, every episode now. Where, like, last episode, you saw Perry walking in the background. I'm waiting to find out that's not his name. I just keep fucking this up. But he's like walking in the background, and then immediately like is in front of his face. He's trying to make a drink, and he turns and looks, and then Kate Siegel's characters are right there, all fucked up. So he drops his glass, and then he like casually just reaches underneath his little like bar cart thingy and grabs another glass and pours more whiskey.
Yeah,
but I was like, oh, okay. Like, usually you see the character walking in the background and whatever, but this is just a jump scare.
Oh, this one. Camille, the character, her daughter, had her hands on him first, like over on his shoulders.
Oh, that's right. You can't see him? Yes.
And then it does the jump scare thing or whatever.
Because he like stands up to make a drink, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so what do you think so far? What did you think of the episode overall?
My favorite episode.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. It was just a little, like compared to what we saw last episode, it was a little underwhelming, I think. Like that death at the end wasn't as dramatic of an experience as an entire party being turning into society. End of society.
I agree. I think, and I mentioned to you this before, I think Mike Flanagan, well, here's something I just noticed. Mike Flanagan didn't direct this episode. I think it shows. Mike Flanagan writes stuff about and things he's upset about.
Mike Flanagan directs stuff. And then four, Mike Flanagan. But also Mike Flanagan. So
I'm just saying, like, I think he makes stuff that, like, he gets a really upset about things, and he writes these things around the horror, so we get a little bit of horror stuff at the end of this episode while we do a lot of like things he's political hangups. Yes,
we glossed over what is the name of the character that he's playing that we're convinced he's gonna die next. What's his name, his character's name? Leo Usher.
Yeah. So
Leo gets real fucked up and then kills his boyfriend's cat.
Yeah. 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 I feel like that's going to play into whatever the next thing is going to be. He's going to end up killing somebody.
I hope it is. What is the story called? The Telltale Heart? Is that the one where he like. The character kills somebody, puts him in their wall and refinishes the wall, and then he keeps hearing the heartbeat, so he goes a little mentally unstable and realizes that the person was still alive, or like they buried their cat in the wall by accident, something like that.
So the next one's called The Black Cat.
Shit.
Which we saw at our office party. That's right. But yes, the next episode is The Telltale Heart. So I just figured out that each episode is a different story.
So this isn't that the one I'm talking about is not called The Telltale Heart. And I know this because episode 5 is called The Telltale Heart.
Yes. Yeah, so I just explained that the next episode's The Black Cat, and then the next episode's The Telltale Heart.
But then which one is supposed to be The Pit and the Pendulum? Is it the one called
The Pit and the Pendulum? But, yeah.
Just kidding.
The Raven? That's a spoiler.
Well, what's that going to be about?
Midnight Drury? What the... I guess we should point out the fact that that the murder of the Rue Morgue is considered one of the first detective stories pre Sherlock Holmes, and it does involve an ape as the culprit. So spoilers, you don't have to read it. And yeah, so I guess Flanagan has this idea, he's tying all of these stories to the murders of the individual. Really smart. So he's interpreting a lot of Edgar Allan Poe. I almost said Ernest Hemingway because we were just talking about Ernest Hemingway. Edgar Allan Poe and then Edgar Poe's work.
Kurt Vonnegut,
Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, would you say? Oh man, I almost want to mention like what movie we're going to review next week because I like Kurt Vonnegut.
Yeah. I mean, just mention it. Fuck it. Yeah, it's fine.
Because we're going to review Slaughterhouse 5000.
Slaughterhouse.
Not to be confused with the famous love story novel turned movie called Slaughterhouse Rules. With Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. We're done with that. We're moving on to our main review of The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster.
Oh.
No Hard Feelings.
Oh, shit.
The Jennifer Lawrence movie?
I was wondering. I was like, this isn't a horror movie, but okay, I guess we're reviewing it. I'm just
Yeah. So we're reviewing Angry Black Girl and Her Monster. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please. For The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, coming in at 3, The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, not an actual emo album. Coming in at 2 for The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, woman's shocking twist on life.
Yeah.
And coming in at 1 for The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, the origin story of Slipknot.
What? Origin story?
Because it looked like he had a Corey, like a...
Oh, Corey mask. Yeah.
The way like the skin was, it looked like a Corey mask. I'm sure it was supposed to be an ode to like Leatherface or something, but
I couldn't get like a clear picture of his face. But
you get to see it once when his hand gets stabbed at some point and his head is like in the doorway, and that's about it.
It's actually in the poster. So that means click on that. Ah, yeah, I see it. It's real fucked up looking. That makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah, it's Slipknot.
Yeah. Alrighty. John, do you want to give your first thoughts?
Sure.
The Angry Black Girl.
What? This is obviously an updated contemporary version of Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Hmm.
Overall, I was underwhelmed. It was... had some fun twists or whatever, but I think it was trying too hard to be a lot of commentary all at once, and then nothing felt like it was fully played out. And then I hate to say it, not our lead, this actress is very good, but some of the other actors I felt like were a little over the top. Maybe I was like, there's too much going on here. I don't know.
Yeah,
it was okay, it was fine.
I really enjoyed the movie overall. I really liked the setup of it, and I think they did a good job of incorporating unfortunately like a lot of things happens in families, low-income families, specifically Black or Hispanic, right, or things, meaning like family members die by the police or by, you know, their neighborhood. And she develops this slant on her life, meaning that she has this idea that she can cure death, that it's a symptom, that's something that she can cure, which is a great, you know, I thought it was really well executed. It's a really fun idea, especially from Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yeah.
That kind of perfectly ties in. And so she has this idea of, I think her brother just died. Her mother's dead. Her brother just died. She lives with her father. Yeah.
There's like a not well understated idea of like Bloods versus Crips style gang fighting.
Yeah, and she wants to bring them back, and she's incredibly smart, and I think they did a really good job of creating her world. You know, like I thought the neighborhood was really well done. They do a really nice job of setting up, establishing all the players, like in, like almost like a one tracking shot, almost, right? These long tracking shots where they kind of just revisit who's the neighbor, which I think it was like she was related to her, was her cousin or something. Is that right?
If I remember this correctly, that was her brother's wife or girlfriend or something. No, okay. That's why, like, she's pregnant with her brother's kid.
Maybe, okay.
Yeah, I think. There were moments at the beginning I kind of wasn't paying attention. I don't know why. I was just distracted, I guess. But that's what I gathered.
And then we see that the neighborhood is, there's like a neighborhood, there's neighborhood people who sell drugs, and there's like gang things, which is pretty, like, it's understated enough to where you can kind of draw conclusions about how they sell drugs there. Her dad is addicted to drugs because of the loss of the brother, and I'm assuming the wife as well. So did great job of setting up the world. Excellent job. Really enjoyed it.
And then at the beginning, there's like this one kid. I'm not sure. I think he's just like another neighbor kid that's in the neighborhood, right? And he's like trying to get into like this building that she always walks into, where obviously you find out is where her lab is at.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like he like kind of calls her out for being there. They're calling her what? The professor or the scientist or something?
Mad scientist.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess he's kind of figuring out she's the one that's been stealing body parts.
Yeah.
Or bodies or whatever.
Of people that are dead and stuff like that. Yeah.
Which made me think, as soon as that scene happened, I was like, I know we're barely kind of meeting this character, but I feel like he's just going to die right now. No, that's exactly what happened. It's like, yeah, he's gone now.
Right, and that kind of, I don't know, that from the movie, it seems like that's what gives her the idea to try to bring her back to life. She gets the idea that, oh, it's electricity that she needs to incorporate into her project. And then she brings back her brother or like a whatever, like a monster version of him. And I feel like at this point, this is maybe about 30 minutes of the movie. The next 30 minutes, 40 minutes of this movie kind of like go everywhere.
Yes.
It kind of loses the plot and the narrative is kind of lost there. Yeah. And like you said, I think it does become more about commentary, about social commentary. Also weird, you know, science fiction-y horror stuff happens. Like there's not like a clear, there's not like a next clear step for the plot. Does that make sense? Like it was kind of just everywhere. And
they also, I understand the commentary on making the monster in this one is brought back for revenge. So it is a product of, you know, the social environment.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is she still created this monster, so I think it loses the commentary there. Mm-hmm. And then the whole point of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein was like the monster was never a monster to begin with, you know. And this one, it seems straight up like, well, that was the intention, it was so that the brother could go and kill people.
Yeah. And I almost feel like I think the film could have spent more time with her working on the experiments and trying to revive the monster.
It was like so quick.
She kind of gets the idea of using electricity or whatever based on the kid she had that conversation with who dies like in the next scene. And they try to revive him, and she notices that he does have like signs of life from the defibrillator they're using on him, or you're trying to revive him after the police shot him. So
yeah, he's like unconscious. He comes back, sees her, and smiles right before he passes in.
He definitely has that awareness, and she sees it. So
one of my 5-word plot reviews was almost something about like, this is what happens when you ban books. Because in my head, I'm like, maybe Frankenstein the novel never existed in this world or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
YouTube doesn't exist either, I think.
I don't know. That's a slippery slope. It's not trying to like it goes back to this thing, like how come they never say they're zombies when we know who zombies are, right? Like that's kind of like one of the things. But I'm pretty okay with it because I think that it's very loose in its adaptation. It's not trying to like, it's taking inspiration from the story. It's not trying to spin it off in another direction. And to varying effects. Right. But I was really impressed with Layla Dillon Hayes, the main actress.
Yeah, Bakaria. She was fantastic. Really, really good. Yeah.
I tried to look at her IMDb. She hasn't really, she's primarily done a lot of like voiceovers, kid acting, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I mean, I guess she was in the Equalizer TV show, but I didn't watch that.
I think it's still going, you know, like still airing.
And I think she was born after I think both of us had already graduated high school.
That's always nice.
she was fantastic. Did you also catch that everybody had COVID in this movie?
What do you mean?
Well, because they never smelled like the rotting flesh in the next room, or like she was never bothered by like the rotting corpses or anything like that. So nobody could smell how the rotten body walking around.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess because there's varying points where it's living in the walls.
Yeah.
That's the point of the story where I don't get it. Like, okay, so I get that it's supposed to, it's reacting in revenge of its things that it feels like it was wronged in, right?
Yeah.
The son. And then they have this whole thing where, and he does all this stuff at night, but during the day he hides her niece or something, the little girl, neighbor daughter, hides the monster in the walls. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is that what you got from that?
That he's living in the, not in the walls, but in the neighboring apartment that's empty.
Because there's about, what would you say, like, not even mouse-sized cracks in the walls. It's just like, this is giant. Like
the thinnest fucking wall on Earth, too. Yeah, like, because I know it's the neighboring apartment because at one point she goes over there and she sees the hole. Like, oh, this is where, you know, she saw her brother looking through the hole. And then her niece or whatever pops up and does a little jump scare. Mm-hmm. And then the niece is like, oh, no, he's behind you. And she turns around and there's like a kitchen area or something. And she sees. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't know. Yeah, so I don't understand why this idea of the monster is, I gather that the brain is rotting, so the primitive primal instincts are taking over, and then that's why he's hurting people that don't deserve it.
Mm-hmm. He kills a cop, or I guess he kills a cop, and then...
I think like several cops. I think it turns out to be like three or four or something. And one of them pissed off one of the gang members, and I just could not understand why. And I think I tried to rewind to figure out what the connection was, and I was like, I give up. I can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Either that or I misread that and the monster killed somebody that else, or I don't know. But I just didn't understand how it knew enough to hide during the daytime.
So that's the thing, is like, did it have enough cognitiveness to know that it needed to hide? Or was it just like a monster? You get what I mean? Like, is it just like murdering?
Well, I guess there are moments, right, where it understands that it's like
the brother, done the, or like the
wrong thing.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of reminds me of like Marvel Zombies. I don't know if I remember reading those issues, but every time they would like feed, they would realize what they've done and feel really bad.
I feel like it's even a little like, well, the way the movie kind of portrays it, it's even more than that, because it's like he kind of knows to be handcuffed by cops, but yet he goes and murders them anyways. He's like, I think there's no balance. But you know?
I think that's supposed to be a commentary on a black person would do
black
that,
person
so they wouldn't
would be killed. A race. Yeah. I got that, but I don't think there was enough balance on
a lot
the
of
monster.
Yeah,
like there was no like clear concept of, was it just like monster that didn't have a brain, or did it have some brain in a monster? Did it know it was a monster? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like that line where they never found.
There's also a moment, well, that's a spoiler, but like, yeah, where he realizes what he's done, and it's like, okay, well, I don't understand. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, I got kind of confused also at one point. I was like, what? But,
generally, you kind of have it either, it's either like a mindless, usually monsters are portrayed as either like mindless killing things, or it's intelligent and is, you know, a victim of its environment because it is a monster. You know what I mean? Like,
I feel like it solely depends on whether you get a brilliant brain or an abnormal brain.
Yeah. Pretty much. It narrows down to those two very general, clear lined ideas.
Abby somebody.
Yeah. Okay. That was, do you want to get into spoilers? Get to the end of this movie. All right, let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
So why did he kill Chad Coleman?
Why did he kill his dad?
Yeah, why did he kill his dad? Like, that part was lost on me.
I think because I thought about that. I think it's just a primitive sort of survival instinct part of his brain took over, kind of like how allegedly Neanderthals kind of worked too.
Right.
Where Chad Coleman was like, oh, my son, and then was like, you're not my son, when he saw his face. So Chad Coleman tried to like hit him or like beat him away, and I think the son's, that part of his survival instinct took over and he killed his dad by accident. The other thing is like, what is it about his hands that leaves those like acid burn marks or whatever? I didn't understand that. Is he like shot full of electricity or something? Or
it depends on whatever he was made of. I saw that as more of like his blood. He didn't have natural blood in him. You know what I mean? He had like whatever that gooey stuff was, because he always had blood on his hands, right? Because he was murdering people. I'm assuming that's what caused it. See, this is where I feel like there could have been, and I don't like talking about what movie should have done, but like people, Vicario, there should have been more. I would have liked more scenes with Vicario with the monster, because it's basically like she creates the monster and then it's loose and she can't control it, and that's it. And then it's sort of just like it's out of her control
at that point. Yeah,
and I feel like there could have been more her interacting with it, like her trying to talk to it and reason with it, but and gets loose. But her first instinct is just like, okay, well, no, I gotta lock it away, and then I don't know, I'll worry about it tomorrow. Then she goes to bed. So
the, the relationships that were like not really established either, like the main gang leader. I mean, I hate to say it. I think I've seen this guy in other stuff and he's good, but he just seemed a little over the top. And I think it was maybe to play off that he's not actually that bad of a guy.
That was a turn I didn't like.
I thought I missed something, like they had grown up together and then that's why he was so nice to her and like
wanted
to protect the family, because otherwise he would have just killed the family.
He had a weird turn where his henchman man or whatever had a run in with the monster. And
oh, that's what happened. The monster killed his buddy with him. I just realized that's what happened.
And this guy was, and for whatever reason, up to this point, he's been yelling at her and making her make drugs. And you know what I mean? Like, he'd been pretty much like a shithead this entire time.
Young women fucking gang
fuck her up. Yeah. And, you know, once the guy realizes, like, I know what you did with the monster, blah, 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 the henchman guy. And he wants to take some sort of like justice because his friend died, which was like the first victim of the monster. He just decides like, oh no, we can't do that. We don't do this. We don't, you know, and he starts defending her, and then they start working together, even though they've been antagonistic this entire time.
Yeah.
That was like a weird plot thread that I was just like,
well, he would also like allow her to get away with doing a bunch of like angsty stuff, which I don't think is all that normal in a reality like that. Simple things like slamming the doors or just walking away from him and like flipping him off or crap like that. But also, I hated that we missed the first run-in that the henchman had with the monster. What was the name of the brother? Damien? Or
wasn't it like Chris or something? Chris was the monster. Jamal was the henchman.
Oh, Chris, yeah.
Jerome was the first kid that dies.
Kango is
the drug dealer.
Taker's name, yeah.
Curtis was the name, I believe, the name of the first victim.
But yeah, you see that he's already had a run-in with the monster, right, Chris? Because he's got the marks on his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I was like, when did I miss that?
It happened. It was like the second night.
Yeah.
That he went after the henchman guy that we talked about. He like bit him or attacked him or something.
He likes choking people.
He does like choking. He's a choker. Yeah.
Except for like the cops, he like brutally murders.
Yeah.
Like that one, the first cop, it turned into like something out of the movie Terrifier, where like he like punches the cop's face so like mutilatedly gross that the face is all fucked up and he's still kind of breathing. I was like, whoa, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of don't get another moment like that until Kango shows up, like basically sacrificing himself to get a gadget to what's her name?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I was like, I didn't understand why that happened, but okay.
Yeah, I didn't understand why that happened either.
I keep forgetting that her name's Victoria. Like, it's not a fucking... Like, this isn't a... Obviously, Frankenstein.
Yeah. Like,
of course Vicaria. Her name's going to be Victoria. Vicaria said.
Vicaria.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's right. There was an entire scene about it. The lady's like, I'm going to call you Vicky because it's easier.
Yeah, Vicaria. Vicaria or mispronouncing it or some shit.
I think she called her like Vicaria, maybe.
Vicaria, yeah. Vicaria, yeah. Sure. And then she
broke her glasses because the security guard came in and tackled her to the ground.
More social commentary, yeah. There's a lot of like.
She's only a black person in that school.
Yeah, she goes to the white school. Yeah. It's a little heavy handed on the social commentary, which I mean, it's fine. It's fine. It's already super cool that this is like a Frankenstein story with. Largely black cast and directing and production, I'm assuming. So that's already really cool. But I don't know. This one didn't hit me very much, but.
No, it was fine. I just didn't.
I was pretty excited about the opening, though. I was just like, oh, yeah, this is actually really cool. I want to see where this goes, you know? Like,
felt more like a Hulu movie than our previous pick.
Then the Hulu movie reviewed last week. Yeah. Yeah, I think that
this is very Shudder Hulu style.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like I thought this would be more of a. I thought they were setting up the fact that this would be more of a conflict of her realizing you can't. Death is not a symptom, which is like kind of like. Thing they set up in the first act, right? That she believes that death is a symptom and that could be cured. I thought it would be more about her struggling to that end, you know?
Like about acceptance or something, right? But there's no lesson to be learned at the end because she figured it out. But I mean, that's where like it gets very science fiction-y because it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
It kind of seems like they tried to bite off more than they can chew with the story.
Yes.
The way they tackled the story. Like it was like too ambitious for what the budget or constraints of what the budget or what they could do with what they had. If that makes sense.
That and also like I mentioned, I don't know if you felt this way too, but a lot of the acting was a little too over the top, I thought. Like some of the characters, I'm like this is too much.
But I felt like some of that was choices, right? I felt like that whole second act they were pushing for them to like we gotta create this tension in the movie and people have to act, you know, people have to like starts closing in her surroundings and act irrational and stuff like that. Is that you know what I mean? Like. It seemed like a.
I suppose so. I just feel like maybe it was too much. I mean, what I'm getting at is I feel like it started losing a clear direction, so that I feel like the directing wasn't super strong.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. Yeah. I felt, and he wrote and directed it. He wrote and directed the project, but it still felt like. Unclear about certain things about how how things were and worked and why these shots or why these performances were in place. Yeah, I get what you mean. It was more ambitious than what I think he tackled.
Idea. Which is like cool. You got to try see if it works or not. But yeah, I think it looks like he's only directed one other feature, right?
Oh, really? Okay.
I think. Oh no, this is according to his IMDb the first
feature.
Actual feature he's written and directed.
Well, hey, you got to start somewhere, you know. I mean, he got it made. Yeah,
it gets better. Yeah.
Because I mean, there's definitely a lot of cool, interesting ideas here. It's just not entirely well executed, I think, is what we're landing on.
I think like the neighborhood and everything too, and the like how dark it got towards the end. It just made me remember that we slept on Candyman for like 2 years without realizing it was one of the masterpieces of our generation.
To be fair, it had mixed reviews, mixed to negative reviews, which kind of spurred us away from it in the first place. It was really good. That is, you know, a case where they married the social commentary perfectly with the story and stuff like that.
It was beautifully done. Yeah, beautifully done. And this one was okay. I mean, it just felt... It really does feel like an early effort.
Right. Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. Alrighty.
She brings back her... She's able to bring back her family because they're freshly dead, so...
Sure, yeah. I didn't understand that part. That's why I didn't bother talking about it. I was just like, okay, sure, yeah. Alright.
She brings back her, like, not, like, sister-in-law, and the baby's still alive in her belly. And I'm like, okay, sure.
Yeah, alright. Yeah, I didn't even want to bother with the ending because I didn't get it personally. It didn't really work for me.
She's smart enough to figure that out, and it's like I see nothing but problems with bringing back dead people, but okay.
Yeah.
As a little movie called Cemetery Man proved.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah. Or Pet Cemetery, yeah. Bringing back people is a bad idea. Alrighty. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you know. Show us your sexy.
Don't do that. Just rate the movie. I'm gonna give the angry black girl and her monster 5 sexy, spooky, reanimated bones.
Yeah, I'm gonna do the same. I think it's a 5. I think it's just right in the middle.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's things to like about the movie, but I wasn't like completely in love with the execution of a lot of them.
I guess it also doesn't help that we had like a surprise fucking great movie last week. Whenever we get a surprise great movie, I feel like we're on this high and we get a movie like this, which is fine. It's just like, oh, well.
Yeah. How
surprisingly fucking great the other movie was.
Yeah, it definitely. Yeah, this movie just had second, third act problems, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, it much more confusing than I was expecting, to be honest. So I really liked the first half of this movie. It was really good. The first like half hour of this movie is really good, really tight, but not the rest of it. Cool. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.